Welcome back to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps of all the shows we love and love to hate. As always, I'm Jody, and this week I have some great shows that have me cringing and screaming. I'm looking at you, Trading Spaces. Also in this episode, I'll be covering Little People Big World, because Audge, Jersey Shore, because Ron, and Teen Mom 2, because Teen Mom 2 is part of my life now, and I am in it until the very bitter and very inevitably ugly end. But before I start my rampage on Audge, remember to become a member on Patreon to get these episodes earlier in the week, unlimited access to all previous bonus episodes on all kinds of topics, personal things, show recaps, documentary deep dives, amazing guests, as well as an invite to the new secret Facebook group. We're spilling some more gossips and secrets over there, so head on over. That's at patreon.com/realitytvpod. And as always, thank you so much if you are already a member. You are keeping the main podcast afloat and keeping me going week to week. And of course, throughout the week, remember to talk with other listeners and me at Reality TV Pod everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All right, now let's get into some Little People Big World because, I am all kinds of pissed off. Now, I never really watch the opening credits. I always zoom right through them, but I happen to watch this time, and I highly suggest you do too. I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but in all the scenes with Audrey and Jeremy, she's pushing on him in that stupid shot of them playing. Okay, just know whenever it's Little People Big World, I'm going to be dropping lots of F-bombs, so turn this off if you got kids listening. There's that shot of them playing with this fucking lilac twig, and she's pushing him, like, down on his chest, and his face isn't looking like, oh, how playful, love you too, Audge. It's like, God, she's annoying, but I'm on camera, so I have to act all vintagey now. And then in the last shot with the whole family, you know, everyone's standing still, looks like they're going to take a group family photo. Except these two are kind of moving around a little bit. And you know why? It's because Audrey is pushing into Jeremy. Looks like she's like twisting his arm behind his back or pinching him on his back or his neck or something. I'm serious. Go back and look. She looks super clingy, maybe even Dateline ready. Okay. You know, I don't know. It's like I'm really starting to feel like I don't really like her or something. Okay. Well, I also don't like 2 seconds into the episode, literally 2 seconds, I had to pause it. I see a stupid sign with that lettering thing that you can push into the board. And it says, get ready to meet our baby girl. Well, you care to tell me who the fuck this sign is for? I mean, it's not for you. You're not telling yourself, get ready to meet our baby girl. No, it's for Instagram likes, right? They're so Instagram hungry that I figured it out. They are the ones that are making me hangry. I need something to shove down my gullet to calm my nerves and my emotions down. But I can't because I have goals, blah, blah, blah. I hate my thighs. It's a whole relationship. It's a lifelong thing. Every spring, it's the first time that they're about to see sunlight in 9 months. We hate the pool. Just, okay, whatever. Back on Little People, Big World. Okay, we're in their new kitchen. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm going to be rambling all over the place. I just jotted down notes. It's going to be a cluster, but stick with me. I will make sure I cover every freaking moment up with this girl. Okay, I'm even mumbling over my words. Okay, stay with me. Now, in this kitchen that they've redone, it reflects everything that is Audge and Jer, the depths of their characters and their soul. That being, it is flat, white, empty, and in need of new trim. See what I did there with her disgusting hair? Okay, now Audrey is telling us once again how she's reflecting on her body, how it's still getting ready for labor. Yeah, we know, dumb fuck, you're 38 weeks pregnant. Imagine if we are this annoyed with her. How annoyed Zach and Tori must be at this point. they have actually had the first baby. You don't see Tori talking about it all the time, right? They have the baby currently. We don't even see them with Jackson as much as we see these two hair hoarders who are constantly talking about their fetus. But you know what? Maybe I should give him a break because Jeremy tells us why they're talking about it all the time. You see, they know they've talked, okay, perhaps during one of their weekly Navigators Council meetings, that it's not going to be just the two of them anymore. Did you guys know that when you have a baby, it's not just husband, wife, or partner, partner anymore? They're going to have a baby in the house that they're responsible for. No, I didn't go anywhere. You didn't press pause or anything. That sound of silence was Amy's eyes popping out of her head when she heard how hard it must have been for her average-sized son and daughter-in-law talking about how tough it would be to bring home an average-sized baby. You know, as opposed to Amy being a little person who is pregnant for the first time with fucking twins. So now Matt comes over and he's even bringing these two groceries because they're too fucking lazy to slip on their Birkenstocks and make their way over to the suburban Whole Foods. And Audrey is just, her disgust for Matt is so apparent. She is physically hiding behind the refrigerator when he walks in. And then she doesn't even say hi or hey, welcome. The first words out of her mouth were, "You haven't seen our countertops yet, have you?" Well, no, Aud, he hasn't seen your countertops, and he probably won't because he's not tall enough to see them, okay? And then when they're sitting down, Audrey's sitting across from Matt, and she is avoiding all eye contact and even talking to Matt at all. Even when Matt is asking her questions, she doesn't even look at Matt to answer them. She answers, but she'll look at Jeremy as she's talking. I would put my son's savings account on Audrey just not liking Matt at all, but Matt has no clue. He has no idea. And you know what? Some families and in-laws don't click. Okay, normal. But when Aud is banking on that Roloff farm inheritance and money and, let's face it, career right now, I mean, she's on a reality show, that is her job, you best be kissing Matt's ass. And you better be carving an all-organic, non-GMO, oil-infused crutch for him next Christmas. Now let's catch up with Amy and her boyfriend, Chris. Last week, he ditched her at the table, and I suspected Chris might be a serial killer. You know, he stalks his prey along this motorcycle trail every year. It's his method of choice. But I've changed my mind. I think he just had diarrhea. The place looked a little shady. Likely wouldn't pass a regular John Taffer bar rescue type inspection. And, you know, he didn't want to just stop up the plumbing or have a line form outside the loo. So he just ran for the hills and it took him a while. If you don't believe me, he did seem a lot lighter when he returned. I think he just had an issue. He had to take care of it. We've all been there. I mean, my mom once threw her checkbook and purse at me in the middle of a Dollar Tree and sped off in her car to go find a public bathroom after a questionable Chinese buffet. Emergencies happen. It's life. It's a human body. Now, thankfully, she returned to pick me up, but then she was all pissed off at me because the store didn't take checks, you know, as most haven't since 96. But, you know, we survive. We move on. Now, speaking of shitty situations, Matt is writing a children's book about the dog he got custody of in the divorce. Okay, well, guess what? Audge needs, quote, sympathy and compassion for what she's been going through. So you see, she's been so thankful that Tori has been calling her, checking in on her, making sure she's okay. All Audrey talks about is how she plans for this all-natural labor and she doesn't want intervention and all this other crap. Good for you, your birth, do it your way. I'm not dissing the all-natural thing. But, you know, be aware enough to know who your audience is, Audrey. And by that, I don't mean us. I mean Tori. She had a C-section because she had to for the health of her baby, and the baby with a very unique circumstance. You know, how about asking Tori how she's doing? Ask her about what staying in the hospital is like. I don't know, like just think of something to involve Tori, not just all about you. All right, well, then we get lots of talk about this baby being late or past the due date. And you know, Audge was loving it. All the attention about this baby being late. And I know for a fact that she was loving it because if you followed her on Instagram during, before, and after the birth, let me just be clear for a second. I don't actually follow her on Instagram because I refuse to give her even one more follow. But, you know, I would pop in from time to time. But she carried on for weeks after she gave birth about how she had all these super uber unique experiences that no other woman has had. She had, and this was a quote that she said, she had all the things. Okay, Audge, let's call Guinness World Records. I'll even take Dr. Oz's word for it. But until then, I don't believe you. Okay, I'm getting kind of ahead of myself, though. I get carried away with her. Now we're 3 days past the due date, okay? And Audge is walking and she's yawning. Ugh, man, boy, I wonder if there's anything that could snap her out of her boredom. Or maybe it's just tiredness from all that not working or not cleaning because Jeremy's doing it all. Or you know what? Maybe it was all the Instagramming of her shelves where she keeps her oils or her this just in post, her restock of always more dad hats. Ugh. Now fast forward through Matt's book party planning, and now we're 8 days past the due date. It's the day of the book party. Holy shit, this scene put me over the edge. So Jeremy says he and Audrey would love to go to the book party, but Audrey didn't want to take away from Matt's party by being there. Yeah, you heard me right. Jeremy explains how it was just so nice and empathetic of Audrey to, you know, stay at home and lounge and duck out from one of his family events because she knew everyone would be coming to talk to her and asking her questions about the baby, and she didn't want to take all the attention away from Matt on his big day. Oh, yeah, that's it. It's not that she just didn't want to go. It's not that she didn't want to go because she wouldn't be getting all the attention. People would be paying attention to Zach and Tori and Matt and baby Jackson because that's who the book is dedicated to. Audrey sure as hell knows how to manipulate Jeremy and manipulate situations to make it look like she's some good-hearted saint. Meanwhile, it's abundantly clear to all of us that she just needs attention and adoration 24/7. You want to bet if Audge would have sat it out if her mom or dad were throwing an event? No fucking way. She'd be there with a fucking Daisy headband on. Now, I'm not too interested in the Matt and Amy stuff, but Amy's comments on Matt and the farm manager chick at that book party, that all but confirmed to me that Matt and whatever her name is, farm manager chick, I forgot her name, they were definitely messing around before the divorce because Amy said something about putting past baggage behind them. It just, the implication was so strong. You know what else is strong? Audrey's contractions. Oh me, oh my, it's time. Who would have guessed? Well, she made sure as shit to get a few made-for-TV contractions on camera, and she also demonstrated how she choked, oh, I'm sorry, I mean slow danced with Jeremy. And she also made sure to epidural shame women, because she didn't lay down even once. She moved and walked and danced. Oh, and spent a lot of time in the bathtub with candles and shit like it's their yearly fucking anniversary when they recite their wedding vows while thrusting. It actually took me over 2 hours to watch this episode because I kept having to pause and write shit down that I didn't want to forget to vent to you about, which is more time than it took me to labor the last time I gave birth. This is not to be a humble brag. It's just a fact. And I'm not describing it as like, oh, the glory of womanhood, like Jeremy is. It's just how tight must Audrey crush Jeremy's balls every night that he is saying stuff that is agreeing with her and just glorifies her asshole in a literal sense. If they use the adjective labor naturally one more time, they would have had to make this 90-minute episode into a 2-hour special. Oh, I guess I should say that they named her Ember because they wanted her to be light and a strong woman and an enduring flame. I mean, okay, well, what's also interesting about this whole birthing thing is that, that's what we're calling it now, a birthing thing, is that they didn't call anyone or text anyone until after she was born. Remember them being passive-aggressive about people being gone? Oh, what if Audge goes into labor? But now all of a sudden you don't even let anyone know she's born until later? And I think Amy hated the name because she didn't even react or say like, aw, when Jeremy told her the name. I'm with you, Amy. But she's here. Yay! Oh, no, not so fast. It's not over. Because just 20 hours later, Audrey's milk came in. And it hurt. Yeah, Audge, it fucking hurts. Try having it come in and you can't pump or express anything because you can't or you're not nursing. Oh, I know. Ooh, taboo formula. Oh, no. You know, Audge and Jer, women have all different kinds of situations, but every woman who has birthed a baby has gone through this and worse. But no, you guys, don't say it. Audge has us all beat. Yeah, I want to beat her with all the fucking overgrown bushes and shrubs in front of their goddamn house. What's going on, farmer boy? Audge keeping you too busy? Well, now this is where all of Audge's complaints gets confusing for everyone. First, she said she had too much milk come in. Then she had mastitis, and now she's spending 16 hours a day feeding, but her milk supply isn't enough. Now, I'm not saying all this didn't happen. What I'm saying is, that's what happens. You're actually in the minority if it comes easy to you and you have no issues breastfeeding. It's like Audrey wants all these unique issues so that she has an excuse to why she ended up doing the normal thing. I about threw my computer and my back out when she said she thought feeding a baby formula was a sin. I am 100% certain you can't tell Yale or Harvard grads apart by who was or wasn't formula fed as an infant. New moms listening out there, I'm giving you permission. Happy mom makes a happy baby, and a happy baby makes a happy mom. Do what works for you, period. For example, what works for Audge is that she selflessly takes on all the pain instead of Ember. You know, she has those feeding issues and blistering and bleeding on her nips. Yeah, par for the course. And her tailbone is sore. Normal. Well, maybe I should explain more in detail. I'll use her words. It, like, sounds weird, but, like, I'd rather be in pain than her. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's so weird, so bizarre that a mother would rather be in pain than her kid. You fucking idiot. But she's born, Ember's here, and hopefully, fingers crossed, that's the last we hear of Audrey's cervix and boobs and her milk ducts. You gotta keep me informed if you watch the show regularly. Let me know as the season goes on if there's anything especially cringy, some really good moments in there, and I'll check them out. Now I'm going to take a breather here for just a moment because up next, Trading Spaces and Jersey Shore. Oh, Jersey Shore brings me so much happiness every week. I think we all know it's not the same as the old school episodes, but every now and then there's hints here and there of those simpler, dirtier times. And for those only, I will forever and always watch anything these lucky assholes provide us. Now, in last week's episode, Meatball Down, there are a number of those little edits, those little snippets of reactions and Mike's witty comments that made Meatball Down probably my most favorite episode of the season so far. So we pick up with Mike telling Ronnie that there are Instagram videos of him going around where he's grinding with a topless chick at the club. Now, Mike's girlfriend is on the phone relaying what she's seen to Ron. And Ron's reaction to hearing this all is just what I call big dumb ox. It's just a blank stare. It's a name we came up with, actually. My best friend dated this guy in high school, and we called him BDO, Big Dumb Ox, because he always just had this, like, blank, dumb look on his face. And actually, years later, I don't know if I've told the story before, but years later, he went back to school and he got a teaching degree. And he goes to interview for a teaching position. And guess what? I was on the hiring team. And oh my God, what it took for me to bite my tongue during that interview. And of course, after he left the interview, which he bombed, of course, I told everyone his nickname, you know, because I'm a professional like that. So, okay, anyway, back to Ronnie cheating on his baby mama, Jen. His brain cells are trying to work as quickly as possible, which is approximately the same speed as my metabolism. Now, as Lauren, Mike's girlfriend, is telling Ronnie what she sees in these videos, which is Ronnie twirling the girl with the boobs, he starts rationalizing that he was just salsa dancing with her. Does he know that what happened afterward and throughout was caught on the same camera that's recording this conversation? He's such a moron. But this is how crazy people function, right? They convince themselves into an alternate reality. And they think we're all going to dumb down and join him in this. Now, thank God, Vinny and Pauly and Mike, their response was like, no, you weren't just salsa dancing. You were grinding on her in the corner. You were doing the wrong thing. You shouldn't have gone into the bathroom and closed the door. Oh, but wait. We got to talk about this door closing. Ron claims there was what he calls an automatic closer on the bathroom door. Ron, this house is about 2 weeks from being leveled, okay? You can smell the asbestos and the lead paint in the bathrooms just watching the show. There's no way in hell the owners installed an automatic closer, whatever the hell that is. I'm at Home Depot almost every weekend, like every married suburban loser, and I've never seen anything close to that. I can't even say nice try. What I can say with 100% certainty, allegedly, is that Ronnie has found the one woman on earth to make a child with who has the exact same amount of functioning neurons and synapses and inability to speak in conversations with another adult. I think there is a very strong possibility this baby will look like Boss Baby next to these two. Quick, someone in Hollywood out there, make this a movie, a documentary, anything. Take the proceeds of the film and then let's send Ronnie's kid off to a boarding school where she's going to stand a chance. Because listening to Ron and his girlfriend talk about anything, especially what he did with this girl, neither of them are realizing that he's fessing up to going way too far with Boobs McNorway while also denying it in the same breath. I don't think any of us have seen anything like this since the season of Teen Mom, remember, with Leah and Robbie. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Now, let's move on to something much more clear and much lighter. Vinny's first Miami haircut. Now, I don't see any difference in his haircut and my son's. And I cut my son's hair with clippers with zero amount of training. You do a one on the sides, two on top, blend it by bringing the clipper down, then you shave the neck, done. But Vinny is such a little bitch. Okay, I love him, but this is too much. His hair looks the exact same before and after. I actually felt bad for the barber because I feel like he's probably going to get some serious razzing, some serious shit after this. But you know what? Speaking of shit, why didn't we ever get to see the whole plumbing issue get resolved? Remember when Ron stopped it up? I want to know, what did the plumber say? Was it a structural issue? Is it a structural issue with Ronnie's colon? I want answers to that. All right, well, let's talk about another asshole, Dina crashing boys' night. I want to like Dina, I really do, but why does she always do this? The guys don't like you, Dina. They did, well, hold on. I guess, no, I probably shouldn't say that. I think they like her. I just think that they get annoyed with her. I don't think they, like, love her and respect her and like her in a way that they do Jenny and Nicole. And Dina may be a meatball like Nicole, but she just lacks that original charm of Snooki. It's like she can dish it out to the guys, but she can never take it from them. She's one of those girls that insists that she can hang, but she can't. And she just goes down in a flame of whining, horrible, self-imposed, burning glory. Does that make any sense at all? That sounds like a kind of a flower. It's a burning, no, that's morning glory. Oh God. Okay, well, let's fast forward to Vin getting his haircut again. And man, he really is like a woman. When we get a bad haircut or bad highlights, you know, it just cuts you down to the soul. You don't feel good even leaving the house. If you aren't in your 30s yet, just get ready, because I'm going to say this is also like when you get a bad zit. If you thought teenage 20s acne was going to go away, oh no, it comes back in your 30s, or maybe I'm just one of the unlucky ones. But when Vinny was talking about his hair, he just wanted to cover it up. I kind of related. You know, when you have like one of those underground zits, it hurts your entire face, or you've tried to get rid of a zit. I know you're not supposed to pop them, but come on, we're all human, but you've done it. And now you're just trying to calm it down, disguise it, but it just won't lay down and go to sleep. That's like Vinny's hair. It's like his big pimple of insecurity on his head. And when he got it fixed, it's the same feeling as when your zit fades. It's all gone. You're a whole new woman. Go to the grocery store without makeup? Yeah, no problem. Rest your hand on the side of your face where that underground was? I could sit here all day like that. Okay, we get it. Well, we end up wrapping up this episode. The girls are razzing Ron about not knowing anything about his girlfriend, which, oh God, holy shit, I fear for that child. We also get Vinny and Polly bathing sex doll Sammy, changing her head out. Hilarious. Although I gotta say, I prefer head number one. She was more of a natural beauty. And then finally, the moment arrives. Jen shows up. The housemates line up on the stairs like they're the Brady Bunch. Reminded me of Christmases 85 through 88 when my oldest sister made my brother, my other sister, and I perform plays for my parents. We'd have to line up on the stairs. She would make us eat raw cranberries, you know, because acting. And then we had to rip up tons of paper to make snow, and she made us clean it all up because, you know, directing and producing really wiped her out and she had to take a break. Childhood issues. This is why therapy is good. All right, well, you know who else is going to need therapy? The couples that were on Trading Spaces. Let's talk about this episode. It is why we watched the show. I don't think anyone really watches Trading Spaces for design tips, right? We want to see Hildy make a disaster and just that tension building. Now, in this episode, not only do we have Hildy, but we have Clinton Kelly, who is not even an interior designer. And we have two very strong, outspoken female homeowners. So it was just a recipe for disaster, and a delicious disaster at that. So we have two couples in Baltimore. Both have chosen their basements to get redone. Terry and Cornell want more color. They want a lounge, a man cave area, and Terry wants a touch of purple because she loves prints. Not like P-R-I-N-T-S, like Prince, the artist formerly known as. That's Cornell's nightmare, however, because he hates purple, as do I. And I know firsthand how repainting over purple can be a real bitch. My first townhome that I bought was all shades of purple because the previous owner loved it, and maybe that's why I hate it, but I get the anti-purple sentiment. Now, their neighbors, Crystal and Will, they want a clubber lounge feel for their basement too. However, they like a more monotone look. Crystal is drop-dead gorgeous, and her husband Will reminds me of Greg Leeks. His voice is low, and he emphasizes things in a very Greg way. Now, Crystal and Will's designer is Clinton, who has way too much Botox in his face because he isn't even recognizable anymore. His concept for their basement is, I would call it ugly. It's royal blue, baby blue, this olive turdy brown, and he has a giant zigzag pattern across the walls and a stripper pole area. I was skeptical, of course, because how could you not? But I was even more skeptical of the homeowners because they had a full-size refrigerator on the carpet. Is that even allowed? Don't you need airflow and shit, like under the refrigerator? Put a piece of plywood down if you must put a refrigerator there or something. It was just gross. But now that is just peanuts compared to what we're in for over at Cornell and Terry's house. Frickin' Hildy is over there with her glazed over eyes and social awkwardness. She always asks the homeowners, oh, what are you thinking? But she never really cares. Hildy is going to do what Hildy wants to do. She used the words Technicolor fabulous to describe her vision. This, coming from a woman who has a simple black and white flat in Paris. Okay, so it's okay to mess with other people's homes, but not yours. You just like black and white. She is a sociopathic monster. But where exactly did she get this Technicolor fabulous idea? Well, she has found yet another horrible fabric that she is inspired by. She is going to use stencils. Yeah, remember those from the 90s? Stencils and shaped hangers to replicate the pattern on the fabric onto the walls. Now, not only that, but she's painting these like yardsticks, two different colors each, and then she's going to nail those onto the wall. The conversations that take place across America when this show is on, I think is either making or breaking marriages. For example, both Dave and I agree that if Hildy were to do our house, we would just take the drywall down to the studs and start over. But let's just say you and your partner disagreed. Well, when hypothetical fix-it time comes after Hildy leaves, you're going to have a lot of Home Depot trips and arguments over, okay, do we just wainscot over the staples in the wall, or are we going to be painting over the super glued hay on the walls? That could be some real impetus for marital discord. Now, fast forward past the Dairy Queen commercial that made my thighs grow even watching it. And let's talk about Clinton's art project. Can we talk about that backward S in cocktails? That was so not intentional, and that's something that would drive me insane seeing that on my wall, that mess up every single time I was down there. Like, how about nix the art project that looked like shit and use that time to finish painting the room a normal color instead of that plastic whatever the hell that people are just going to throw away anyway, right? Okay, let's talk about the doors and the trim. Oh my God. Clinton was painting that beautiful 4 or 5 inch baseboards. You got baseboards? He's painting them bright fucking blue. Who does that? When you have a trim that is that large, it's actually easier to tape or cut in with a brush. So why are you painting them? And the same thing with the doors. Don't paint your interior doors. That would be my number one thing if I was doing trading spaces. Do not touch my trim, my moldings. Don't you dare paint my doors, not the baseboards, the crown molding. Leave a messy edge if you must, and I will come back. I'll cut in with a brush. Just don't paint that stuff or the outlet covers. That drives me crazy too. Just don't. Now, let's talk about the reveals because that was the whole reason for watching this episode. Paige Davis either has really, really bad taste or these designers have some deep, dirty stuff on her because she claims she loves these rooms. Do you think Hildy even likes her own rooms at the end? Because how can she honestly look at that shit show of a space with the ugly stencils and the crazy loop-de-loo leaves and the sticks on the walls, colors not matching at all, and say she's proud of it and it came out as planned. And let's talk about that ball sculpture thing. That was a total disaster. The thing was deflated. The balls were crushed. It should have been thrown out completely. It would have been ugly even if it didn't deflate and if it didn't look like baby's first shit after trying solid foods. So the homeowners, Cornell and Terry, come in, okay? Paige does her best optimistic reveal. Open your eyes. What the? To which Paige just says, uh-oh. And the homeowner then says, oh, hell to the no. So once again, Paige has got to put some spin on it before she gets body slammed against the wall. It's great for your grandson. And it's multi-purpose. And then the homeowner says that she's about to pee herself and then repeats, I said pee myself. They could not have been more pissed off, like sincerely, truly to the core pissed off. And Terry is not just pissed off at Hildy. She's pissed off at her friend Crystal and even said that it's friendship damaging and that the room is disgusting. Ooh, boy. Well, what about Crystal and Will's house? Now, over there, Clinton has ripped up the carpet down to the concrete. And it's not like it's a polished or stained concrete, like a modern look. It's just basement concrete. So, Crystal, open your eyes. Oh, no. Crystal hates the colors. Yeah, ditto, girl. We all do. The only thing she likes is the bar in the shelf that was from the overstock tent. And then Terry comes in for the final goodbye scene, and she beelines to Crystal and starts choking her, like actual choking, hands around the neck, charade on Kim Zolciak season 1 or 2 of Real Housewives of Atlanta. You can tell the husbands are trying to play it cool and be the calms in the storm, but these ladies are, oh my God, they're going to have some major damage control to do with their relationship. You can see the cracks forming, and it's going to be a lot of puttying and sanding and repainting and probably a lot of alcohol to fix the entire mess. Now, I just wish they do follow-up episodes at the end of each season. I know this is the first season back, but I want to see the behind the scenes or the confrontations with designers and homeowners off camera. That's the stuff we want, right? Now, next up, last but certainly not least, because it's one of my most favorite shows after 90 Day Fiancé, that would be Teen Mom 2, coming up right after the jump. It's finally here, the season premiere of Teen Mom 2. I didn't realize how much I missed hating Nathan's face until his roided out head popped up outside the courthouse. I'd completely forgotten about Janelle's veil fail. I didn't, however, forget about Leah's standing in her power, y'all, speech during her 2 weeks as a lip sense rep / motivational speaker. But let's get to current day. We start out with Chelsea and family, and they're having a very Pinteresty day outside shooting arrows, and strangely enough, Chelsea's waited once again until filming to meet with her lawyer about hyphenating Aubrey's name. Why would that be? Well, that was my first groan of the season right there. Really, you couldn't have taken care of this already. What is so time-consuming in the country cabin house that you couldn't have driven over to the one attorney in whatever Dakota you're in just to get it done? I gotta give credit where credit's due. Chelsea is looking very slimmed down. I want to hate on her because I'm jealous, but good for her. Although I still can't with that ratty hair. Now, let's check in with Kale, and I'm going to give you a little warning. We're jumping all over the place this week because we kind of had to stick with this timeline with the VMAs and vacation. So Kale starts out with a typical Kale voiceover. The boys have been adjusting well to the new baby. Even though it's been 2 months, he still doesn't have a name. So for now, we've been calling him Baby Low. You guys, that time period, how crazy was that? I think we had determined that it was just a last name thing with the naming, right? Or could it have been a first name? You think it'd be crazy not to name a kid for 2 months, but I taught a kid once who had a little brother. He was a little over a year old at the beginning of the school year. And, oh God, I'm not going to use his real name. Let's just say the little brother's name was Sam, okay? And then at the end of the school year, I saw Sam outside and I was like, oh my gosh, look at your little brother, Sam. He's so big now. And my student, okay, so this is now 9 months later, he goes, oh no, he's not Sam anymore. His name is Luke now. Everyone was calling him Sammy, so my mom decided to change it. Yeah, so it's possible. I mean, it was over a year after he was born, they just totally changed his name. Can you imagine? So it happens. Now, back to Kale and Company, because this little baby Lux Low, whatever the hell his name is, he's not the only one with a jacked up name. Kale has a friend named Bone. Bone. The thing is that Bone doesn't even look like a bone. Her pale skin and red hair would imply her skin tone is that of bone, but she's the most non-bone looking person I've ever seen. Kale Salad and Bone are eating at an Irish pub, a perfect place for Kale to wear shorts three sizes too small before eating a giant serving of nachos. And Bone loved those nachos, that's for sure. Girl couldn't tear into that amalgamated cheese fast enough. They talk about Kale and Chris not speaking. Oh, shocking. And that he's not involved at all. What a surprise. But she and Joe are good. She and Javi are good. You know, because they have to be the bigger person to put up with Kale's shit. But what about Brianna and Javi? What's going on with them? Are they together? Kale, how do you feel about it? Well, in typical Kale fashion, once again, she says she doesn't know and she doesn't care. However, she then proceeds to say how fake Javi is and how he acts nice when cameras are around. Oh, like you do, Kale? I mean, what an unnatural reaction to act nice when you know you're being filmed. I'm not even a real housewife or a teen mom, and I know you have to act nice on camera. You talk shit behind people's backs. Or on a podcast. My mother raised me with something called manners, okay? Now, at this point, we catch up with Brianna, whose accent has gotten noticeably stronger. I like it. I mean, it's better than my accent, that's for damn sure. And she and her sister, Brittany, are in Los Angeles for the VMAs. I'm guessing because music videos are still a thing. I don't know. I'm too old to know. But she and Javi have been flirting online. So she says people are thinking they're dating, but they're not. Sure, Jan. Well, you know who else is there for the VMAs? That's right. My favorite flavor of dum-dums, Leah. She shows up on screen and her extensions are all wet and scraggly, just as I expected them and dreamt them to be, and she's waiting on her hair and makeup people to arrive. Well, guys, what the hell have we done wrong to not deserve this kind of treatment? Quick, someone get a Teen Mom baby. Now, I perked up when Brittany said, white girl got cake, because I thought she was talking to me personally, but alas, she was just talking about Leah's ass. Everyone tells me that. Shut your braggy face, West Virginia. Now, this scene is really important because this is actually the first time Brianna and Leah are meeting one another, even though they're both on Teen Mom 2, because this was a while back. The season hadn't aired yet. They hadn't had the reunion. And Leah is just so disinterested in Brianna. You can hear the Erica Jane in her voice, the I don't give a fuck. But she asks her basic questions anyway, like, so Brianna, you have a daughter? No, Leah. They asked her to be on the show because they're changing directions for Teen Mom now. Freaking idiot. Now, despite Leah practicing the ABCs under her breath, Brianna proceeds to tell her about Lewis being a slacker dad / truck driver and how Devon is in jail for drugs. Drugs? Leah practically yelled back. There goes mommy Leah back to stress camp again. Now, while Liam might be going to stress camp, Brianna and Javi are planning to go to Disney World and stay at the same hotel. Well, my little ears perked up because I myself will be going to Disney World in the next few weeks, and nothing would make my trip more worthwhile than a run-in with a teen mom at Disney World. Splash Mountain Fast Pass be damned. I'd be all up in whoever's business. I don't care who it is. I'd be stalking them like a hungry Simba all over the Magic fucking Kingdom. Now, we're going to talk about that Disney trip more in a bit, but let's pop over back to Papa Randy's house of scaring the shit out of kids with insane vocal tricks. You guys, that guy is a dentist slash Botox injector. Just saying. Now, long story short, in the little house in the Dakotas, Adam will allow the name change if he doesn't have to pay child support. You know, because that's how he's proving to us that he loves his daughter. Asshole. Now, let's get to the belle of the ball, Janelle. Married life with David has been great. Okay, as David soups up a mini motorcycle for Jace to just race off to slam himself against a tree on the land. Now, little update from the very happily married wife and mother, Janelle. She hasn't talked to her mom, and her second baby daddy, Nathan, was arrested for domestic violence, so Kaiser's visits have to be supervised by Nathan's mom. You remember her, the one who shaved Nate's back in the Being Nathan special? Well, it's just so strange because Janelle gets along great with mostly everyone, even Nate's mom, until she requested immediate emergency custody of Kaiser. I mean, so weird, right? Okay. Turns out Mother Nathan has accused Janelle of leaving bruises on Kaiser and leaving him in what Janelle calls, quote, hot, hot heat. Would that be called triply redundant? You know, I better not use big words when we're talking about Janelle. Well, what else is of concern, Janelle? Fill us in. She says Nate's mom should have just asked her to see Kaiser. She would have calmly and very easily said yes. But now, she won't ever look at her in the same way. She's just like Barbara in her mind now. Gee, wonder why someone would want something on paper with someone who's so black and white and vindictive all over. Can I also mention that Janelle looks like hell? Her skin looks terrible. She has scratches all over. I'm just putting that out there. I'm not quite sure what that means yet. Okay, back over to Kale's. Now we know for sure that she's named the baby Lux, L-U-X. The name Lux sucks. Even Lincoln hates it. And you know what? Anything Lincoln says, I agree with because he's the cutest damn kid ever. We get a little scene with Javi in New York in the car talking about a friend with Brianna. It's obvious he just needs this little scene to make it clear that he and Brianna haven't had sex yet. But I don't know about that one. I do know that Brianna looks great in that angled lob because she looked gorgeous all done up for the VMAs. Leah, I think, looked fine. She was dressed like a little bit too old for me, but better than normal West Virginia Leah. Now, oh, wow, we get a scene with Nathan. I actually get like physically tensed up when I see him. There is a rage in him. Very much like Ronnie on Jersey Shore. But the thing is, Nathan is smarter, which makes him scarier. You know Nate has something in him. There's just a switch that's ready to be switched, flicked, whatever. He's going to be a serial killer, allegedly. Which makes Nathan saying that he thinks David has violent tendencies hilarious and really scary. For however many kids they have between Nate, Janelle, David, is that like five kids? God help them all. Okay, now again, back to Chelsea. I know lots of jumping. Next week, I'm going to go girl to girl because we don't have to deal with this VMA timeline thing. But I'm a little confused with Chelsea's timeline because her drapes changed from the scene with Randy when he was squealing like a pig to Chelsea with the blonde-haired Chelsea friend talking about Am's arrest. MTV, we're on to you. But more importantly, let's talk about what's going on. Adam has been using drugs, and his girlfriend says that he broke her arm and his behavior is escalating and getting worse. So now Chelsea is not only going to go for this name change, but a visitation change so that he cannot be alone with Aubrey. Now let's lighten things up. Guess where we're off to next? West Virginia. Addie is hanging between Leah's legs and screaming, and Leah is just acting like nothing is happening. Hell no. Leah, you get down, look at her in the eye, and say, I'm speaking right now, you need to wait and be respectful. But no, Leah is fretting because she feels like she needs to tell Kale what Brianna was saying. She's been listening to a lot of Luann's greatest hits, and she believes in girl code. I don't believe this is girl code. I think Leah is just being a snitch and a bitch. She is stirring shit up, and she knows it, but she's covering it with a, I just felt uncomfortable with it. Now, where it gets really shitty and murky is that Leah made it sound like Brianna and Javi were staying in the same room together. But Brianna said they were staying at the same hotel, not together. So now Kale is pissed because she and Brianna got their ass and breast and chin reductions together. And now this, we can all understand that, right? I mean, so relatable. If you can't trust someone you get your free Instagram butt lifts with, who can you trust? And you know, Kale thrives on this stuff. So she calls up Joe so she can gab about baby daddy drama. It's classic Kale. She wants to drag Joe into this, so she's creating this dramatic situation where maybe Isaac shouldn't go. And Kale now thinks Brianna is trying to be messy by telling Leah. Now, I can't follow the logic with any of this. I'm too old and too educated to follow it, and I know it's the same with all of you. Now, back on the land, Janelle is wearing boots and a tank top. Take that in. Also, David looks more and more like a police sketch, and these two assholes are saying it's now Barbara's fault that Nathan's mom filed for custody. Why? Because Barbara's still upset about not being invited to the wedding. Yeah, that's it. Barbara is still bitter about not getting a serving of her never-ending breadsticks and salad at your reception. No, the actual reality is that there have been signs of neglect and abuse, and Janelle and David are covering for one another. This is all allegedly, but I believe it. Now, jumping back to Brianna again, turns out Brianna and Javi were planning on sharing a room, but it was more like a suite. Huh. Now, I knew there would be a time when my mind would change about Brianna, and I think this season will be it. Even the suite with the multiple rooms, in my opinion, would be inappropriate at this point when you have kids involved. Just slow your roll. And also, how are you so comfortable pooping in the same suite as your new guy, Brianna? Damn, millennials are brave. Okay, now take a moment. I want you to go grab your tissues. Okay, go ahead. Maybe grab some Imodium too, because Janelle is crying. And her stomach hurts because everyone is after her. No one should be concerned about her kids with bruises or saying that they're being hit or spanked. No one should ask questions. Well, I'm going to ask a question. Why is that producer feeding into Janelle feeling sorry for herself? I don't think Barbara should have sold the story. I'm not saying that, but you know what? Janelle does it all the time. And if no one is listening to Barbara's concerns for her grandsons and her granddaughter, maybe she's doing it on social media, just like Janelle does, because she knows that's the only way she can get Janelle to respond or someone to act on these concerns that she has. I don't agree with it 100%, but I'm just as confused as to what I would do if I were Barbara. Janelle is a mess, and something is up beyond what we're seeing. I don't know. She just looks like hell. I don't want to throw drug accusations out there, but something is up. We did get to hear her say David was working on the land, though, so let's mark that one off on the bingo card. Okay, we're nearing the end here. Hang in there with me. Javi and Brianna are spending vacation together. Ooh. Kale is pissed to find this out. She finds out on FaceTime. Ooh, awkward. And we see the whole gang together at dinner. Even Roxanne is there. They're talking about the reunion that's coming up, but I was thinking about this vacation together, okay? Should they or shouldn't they have? Now, to be honest, if it was just Lincoln, I'd say, okay, Javi is his dad, and it isn't any of Kale's business what he's doing or who he's with when it's his time with Lincoln. Kale had that Chris guy around when Javi was gone, so how is it any different? However, he has Joe's son, Isaac, there, so that's where it's real iffy to me. Now, I cannot wait to see how Leah handles the confrontations that she's going to get from Brianna and Javi, because now they know Leah was the one who started all this shit. And, I mean, just everything with Leah and with Janelle. This season is going to make up for that horribly boring OG season. That's for sure. Thank God. And with that, thanks for listening today. Check out People Are Wild podcast. My friend Kim, who was just on here a couple weeks ago, put together a little Mother's Day podcast special, and she was so kind enough to ask me to do a little spot talking about motherhood and surrogacy. So check that out. That's People Are Wild podcast. And don't forget to check out all that bonus content on patreon.com/realityvpod, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, @realityvpod. Tell me what you're up to this week. Find all those links in the show notes, and pretty please leave a 5-star review. Just click those little stars on iTunes next time you're there if you love and listen to the show, and spread the good word to all of you mothers out there. Have a wonderful Mother's Day. Have a great weekend. Talk to you soon. Stay salty.